Well, I've been waiting for well over a year for Lynn McTaggart to join us as we talk about her work, the intention experiment, the bond, the field as well. And I'm going to try to talk Linda into doing an intention experiment to make it rain over Southern California, because we need what Phoenix had. It is in a drought, severe drought situation. But let's talk about intention experiments when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Lynn McTaggart back with us, journalist, author, one of the most preeminent spokespeople on consciousness, new physics, author of several books. I just mentioned the name. And Lynn, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. How are you? How have you been?
Oh, hi, George. I've been great. I've been engaged in a war, actually.
A war? What kind of a war?
Well, you know, not only do I write books like The Field, but I have a magazine called What Doctors Don't Tell You that has been going for 25 years. But just a couple of years ago, we decided it needed to be a newsstand magazine. So we changed it and put it on the newsstands in America and in the UK and a bunch of other countries. And ever since we've done that, we've been targeted by skeptics and the pharmaceutical industry who have been trying to ban us.
The big boys are after you, huh?
The big boys are, but it's been a really interesting ride, a real evidence of David versus Goliath.
Are you going to win?
Well, it's been interesting. I mean, because they tried to do just about everything to stop us. They skeptics have a pack. You've probably been targeted by them too, and they're small but well organized. And one of the groups that was backed by the pharmaceutical industry started writing to our distributors, to all the stores. They even managed to place an article in the London Times. And as Lillian Hellman once said about about Mary McCarthy, I think, said about Lillian Hellman, everything she writes is a lie, including and the. Well, that was pretty much that article. But when I talked to a libel lawyer, they said, well, look, don't try to sue them. In this day and age with the social media, use it as a platform. And that's exactly what we did. We started taking the fight to them and basically, you know, pointing out, you know, what bad journalism it was, et cetera. And our subscriptions started going wildly up. Then the skeptics then started targeting particular stores and writing in. And one store chain in the UK pulled us. But then we got our followers, because I started working out that our followers, with social media and everything, were sort of double the circulation of the London Times.
That's right.
So we started getting our guys to write back, and the store chain got such a tsunami of letters that they put us back in.
How about
so
that?
It was really interesting for me to, you know, when I started looking at how to do stuff like this, that this kind of decentralized power we now have is a really important thing for us to understand. We think about being so powerless.
Let's take a few minutes while we can. Lynn, you're on with us for only 2 hours tonight. It's going to go by quickly, and we'll use the last half of this hour to talk about intention and see what you can do for Los Angeles and rain. But let's take the 15 minutes or so here to talk about what you've been doing then about health. Do you find that those practitioners of alternative medicine come under fire? Because, you know, I know several here in the United States who are being investigated. They're being pointed at as being frauds, and there are other people who swear by them. What's happening in that arena?
Well, it's exactly as you say. I mean, there's a lot of medical McCarthyism going on, George. And, I mean, you know Dr. Andrew Wakefield. I think he's been on your show.
Yes.
The guy who first blew the whistle on the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. Now, there's an interesting story that's just come out. That guy got vilified. I mean, just because he did research in that area showing a link between that vaccine and autism. In here, the UK, they went after him. The press even went after him. The General Medical Council took away his license. He was just internationally castigated for that. We now find that the Centers for Disease Control in the U.S., the CDC, did a study in 2004 that actually showed a link, and it's just come out through one of the insiders there, a whistleblower, actual scientist, that they hid the data. They manipulated the data to make it look like kids were not getting autism, but definitely African-American boys, there was some huge increase in autism. So, and they, you know, as I say, they manipulated the data. That goes on all the time. So there's this real pressure that's coming from the pharmaceutical industry. It's not fake. It's not conspiracy theories. It's real. And it's for anybody who tries to speak out, they attempt to crush them, as happened to us.
And are they winning?
Well, no, because this is the interesting thing of it, George. Because information is now decentralized, little guys, relatively little guys like us, can prevail because, now I found, for instance, when we were in the midst of all of this attack and these skeptics were even trying, they were messing up our search engine optimization because some of them worked in computing. They were hiding the magazines. They were doing all of this stuff. Nevertheless, our magazine website, there was an international competition about, you know, websites and in different categories. And very improbably, our website won Health Website of the Year. We actually beat out BUPA, the NHS, all these big, big organizations, you know, little us. And it was, for me, more affirmation of the idea that the little guy can prevail, that we can get together because we are now, we do have access to information we didn't have before.
Amazing stuff that you've been doing. Now, you've been looking at various things, too, supplements. You're a big booster in vitamin C, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, my mother-in-law had end-stage breast cancer, and she was too late for any of the conventional treatments, and this is when she was 79. And we brought her to a doctor who specialized in alternative cancer treatments. He gave her high-dose intravenous vitamin C, other supplements, and a few other things, and completely reversed that cancer. She had been given 3 months to live. So I've seen it firsthand, and I've reported on it and seen a lot of evidence. You know, vitamin C isn't a vitamin, really. It reestablishes cell communication, George. So it's so important for us. We can't make it ourselves. And yet, you know, it's really difficult to get the medical industry to really understand the importance of this. Linus Pauling was right.
Sure was. I just lost my sister, Lynn, to stage 4 brain cancer.
Oh, and, wow. I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And we tried to let her use some alternative things too, but she went with the traditional way and some experimental drugs. I will say that they had given her 6 months. She lasted 2 years. She was quite a fighter, but in the
That's
end,
so good.
Lost
yeah.
that battle.
Well, this is the sad thing about it, is the medical community is lying about cancer treatment because they're scared. These are the only tools they have. I think, you know, doctors all mean well. I mean, they mean well. They want to heal patients. That's why they went into this. That's why they go through the grueling study they have to do. But all they've got is drugs and surgery. That's all they're given. And there's such influence by the pharmaceutical industry now that it's really difficult for a doctor. It's dangerous for a doctor to try to explore alternatives. You know, they're terrified. I meet them all the time. They come to a lot of conferences I speak at, and they say, I'm practicing this or that on the quiet, because they know that the same thing that could happen, that happened to Andy Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield, could happen to them. They could pull their license. And, you know, it's time, and I think what's happening now is so much of this is coming to light, like what just happened with the CDC. I mean, big explosive thing that a government agency hid data. We're now finding out just how dirty the pharmaceutical industry is. And by the way, one of the head people of the CDC went to work for one of the company that makes the MMR vaccine. So that's the problem of the unholy alliance now between government and, you know, and these drug companies.
That's happening all the time. We know that a former attorney with Monsanto went to the FDA. I mean, those things happen too often, don't they?
Oh, the FDA is run by the pharmaceutical industry. Let's not doubt it. I mean, the government, the U.S. government, provides much less money to the FDA, and it's now funded by Big Pharma. You know, they contribute a lot of money for it. And so there's, you know, I tell you, one of my favorite books at the moment is called Deadly Medicine and Organized Crime. And it's written by, you'd think it's written by an investigative reporter. It's written by a total member of the medical establishment, a guy called Peter Gosch, who's the head of an organization called the Cochrane Collaboration in Denmark, which is the group that looks at medical studies on, all of your average treatments to say, yeah, this has been adequately proven or this hasn't. So he is a very, very well-experienced medical researcher and doctor. He even worked for the drug companies. And he likens the drug industry to the mafia. He says they use everything from threats, you know, death threats, to bribery, to every kind of corruption and manipulation and fraud to come up with, you know, the results they do. And so, and he's calling for, and more the heads of medical areas are calling for some sort of rein on the pharmaceutical industry and to basically set medicine free.
You call your latest book The Bond. Tell me a little bit about that, Lynn.
Well, I was really interested after looking at this new science demonstrating that we're not individuals, self-contained individuals, but part of this giant quantum field. And also with all of the experimenting and the study I'd done into the power of thought to affect the physical world and to affect each other, I started wondering, okay, how are we supposed to live? If we're so different from what we've been told, how are we supposed to live? And I was particularly wondering, you know, was Darwin right? Were we meant to be so competitive? You know, because that's what we're told. We're told even our genes compete, you know, that we have selfish genes. So I started looking into that, and I saw that, you know, and again went back to the science, but this time not only cutting-edge physics, but biology and psychology and all of those ologies. And I discovered that actually Darwin was wrong, that nature has designed us not to compete, but to connect, and that we actually do very well when we connect together and we do things cooperatively. And when we compete, we fail. We harm ourselves and each other. And so it was really to figure out, okay, how do we reestablish this kind of connection? Because everything in our society is built on competition. And, of course, when I wrote the book, too, I started thinking about it right after the big crash of 2008 and the mess that we were in, because it seemed to me that that was really the end point of selfishness, you know, and competition. Because when it is every man for himself and dog eat dog, you know, eventually you see the breakdown of all kinds of societal structures. So it was really saying, okay, how do we recover this wholeness? How do we live in a different way? And I also wanted to, you know, point to industries and organizations and say to them, you know, you got to do it differently because it's not working the way you're doing it.
I'm convinced that there is a cure on this planet for every affliction. You just have to find it, whether it's in the rainforest or the Congo. It's there, Lynn.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's just take some of the big ones, big illnesses. You know, if you're talking about health, I mean, there's definitely cures for cancer out there. When you're talking about the health of the planet, it's all about looking at capitalism a different way, in my view. I mean, there's nothing wrong with capitalism. I'm not a socialist. And believe me, I live in the UK where I see some of the limitations of socialism,
sure,
because this is a much more socialist country than the US. I see the problems with lacking motivation and a lot of things like that. But there's another way to do stuff. And we see it from, you know, for instance, there's a store chain called John Lewis over here. And it's very interesting because the head of the company at the beginning of the 20th century decided he didn't think it was right that faceless shareholders should reap all the benefits and the people working at the company shouldn't. So he created a partnership, which means everybody who works at the company owns a piece of that company automatically. And so at the end of every year, instead of giving all the profits to shareholders, he gives it back to the employees. And you wouldn't believe what a great store chain this is. I mean, everybody, it's the nicest, there's the nicest group of employees. Everybody's really helpful, and the store does better than its competitors out there who have the more traditional kind of thing with, you know, outside shareholders. So it's really fascinating to me that there is another way to do stuff. And similarly, when you talk about things like the rainforest or whatever, yeah, as long as you don't make profit the god, and you start looking at other aspects, you know, who are you hurting and helping by what you do? You start looking at things a different way. But right now, the economic mechanism that we have is so short-sighted that it is causing the kinds of problems we're talking about, whether you're talking about in the drug industry or the rainforest or indeed our health. It's in nobody's interest to cure cancer.
Are you finding that the more they make, the more they won't come up with a cure?
Well, you know, I have a party game for you, George. I want you to tell me one drug out there that cures anything besides antibiotics. And I've been doing this for 25 years, and I can't think of anything. Maybe one of the drugs for cold sores, but it just kind of puts it away. It just gets rid of a cold sore.
It
doesn't cure it.
No, it just tempers it. I don't think there's anything that, not a drug. What about like the polio vaccine to prevent
polio?
Well,
that doesn't cure it. That looks like it's sort
builds
of
up your
prevents
immunity.
It, but it,
yeah.
Vaccines work imperfectly. And there's a lot of question. I mean, a lot of that data is manipulated too. When you look at polio, you look at the statistics and you can see there was one sort of weird blip and then it was going down even before the vaccine came along. But let's even assume that it worked some of the time. It doesn't cure it. It may help some people not get it at best. So when you look at anything, arthritis, cancer, heart disease, or whatever, drugs are designed for maintenance. And the big reason that they can't work very well is that they're a one-size-fits-all mechanism. And we're not. You know,
Lynn,
we need individual treatment.
We're going to come back in a moment and talk about some of your intention experiments. Plus, I'm going to need you to do one, or at least help us through it. We'll be back. Lynn McTaggart with us. We're going to be talking about her intention experiments, and we'll take calls with her next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Lynn McTaggart with us. Intention experiments, Lynn. Let's talk a little bit about the field, first of all. What are we tapping into when we do these?
Well, when I first started looking into the field, I was interested in what I thought were human energy fields. But then I started speaking to a lot of cutting-edge physicists around the world and discovered each of them doing work in something that was one aspect of a real revolution in the way we see the world and how we understand ourselves and the rest of the world and how it works. And all of them described that we're part of a giant quantum field. It's called the zero-point field, and I'm sure we've discussed it, and you've discussed it with other people. It's well known in physics, but it has been subtracted out. Scientists find that this information, this knowledge, messes up their equations, so they cut it out, which to me is a little bit like subtracting out God, because what they understand is that subatomic particles aren't just individual billiard ball entities, you know, self-contained entities. They're like a vibrating packet of energy, and they trade energy and information back and forth with all other subatomic particles and also this background field. That gives rise to an extraordinary amount of energy, so that if you were sitting about a yard away from me, the energy between us would be enough to boil all the oceans of the world.
Wow.
That's how powerful and energy dense this is. But here's the two implications of this giant energy field. First of all, it is almost like a mothership of information, because it essentially captures everything that ever was. You know, it's a memory of everything that has ever happened, essentially, because it's information traded back and constantly back and forth. And secondly, it's a very neat mechanism to explain all of the things that you talk about on your show, everything from precognition to ESP to remote viewing, mm-hmm. because it's a mechanism that connects us all. We're connected to the furthest reaches of the cosmos. So when I started doing that research, I spoke to a number of scientists who were also demonstrating that thought is an actual thing. Our thoughts are an actual thing, but also those things affect other things. And I was also interested and probably influenced by the work of the late, great Fritz Albert Popp, who just passed this last spring. And he was a German physicist who first discovered that all living things beam out a tiny current of light. They're called photons, the smallest unit of light is a photon. And he discovered and measured that we're sending out light, and other living things are sending light back synchronicitously. It's almost like we're having a light conversation all the time, mm-hmm. as well as this actual conversation. So from that, I started wondering, well, okay, if thoughts are things that affect other things, and we certainly saw that in a lot of evidence. There was the work of Robert John at Princeton, Dr. Robert John, and the PAIR research program that looked at how human beings can affect sensitive computers and computer programs by using random event generators, and seeing that human beings had an effect on random event generators, making them go one way or another. They are like electronic tosses of the coin. And they would have all kinds of programs showing that, let's say, flashing images of cowboys and Indians. And under a random event generator, if nothing is happening to it, you should get about 50% images of cowboys, and then flash to 50% images of Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And they flash it back and forth alternately. But he found that when people were sat in front of these computers and sent intention to them, they would and said to themselves, I want to see more cowboys and Indians, they would get more cowboys and Indians. And he found an effect size that was 10 times as good as aspirin, which is considered one of the great successful drugs. And other people have gone on to show that intention can affect everything from single-celled organisms to full-fledged human beings. So my big question was, okay, what else can we do with this? And what happens if lots of people are thinking the same thought at the same time? You know, does that magnify the effect? So since 2007, I've been running experiments. I work with scientists around the world. I invite my audience around the world, and my books are now in 30 languages, so I've got lots of people around the world.
How many experiments have you conducted?
26. and 23 have shown measurable positive effects. So we carry on, and I mean, they are some of them are remarkable in that, you know, we've done everything from making food grow faster, making seeds grow faster and sprout, to
making crime
water.
Go down, and making
Sorry?
Crime go down, making crime go down in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely, with you. I mean, we ran one, it was June 2011, I believe it was, 2012, and we took a whole year to observe what happened. And we, you know, when you're doing an intention experiment looking at crime or war-torn areas, as we've done, where we're inviting people to send intention to lower violence, you can't just look at what happened after a week. And you can't just sort of say, oh, yeah, the crime went down by, you know, 20% or something. It worked. You have to look at a whole timeline. So what we did for that Washington, D.C. thing, to remind your listeners, is we looked at what happened for the whole year before and then looked at what happened the whole year afterward. And it was really remarkable because we found that there was a decrease of violent crime in Washington, D.C., in all the areas around the Capitol building, of 33%. And it completely bucked the trend. There had been increasing violent crime going on all before it. And so for the entire year afterward, it went down. And there was an increase in property crime. So it wasn't that all crime went down. It wasn't a coincidence. It just was what we'd focused on, violent crime. And if you recall, the other thing that was really amazing about it was that John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi, who are absolute sworn enemies, you know, Speaker of the House and former Speaker of the House, different political parties, and they hugged the day after our intention experiment.
How about that? So I'm going to need you to conduct one to make it rain cats and dogs over Los Angeles. How do we do this?
Okay, well, we could do that. Do you want to do it on this show?
Let's do it now.
Okay, let's do it now. Now, normally we use some music with this, so this is going to be us doing stuff where it's going to be quiet. But I can be talking while we're doing it and just imagining it, okay? And just imagining the different parts of Los Angeles being flooded with rain. And why don't we try to say, do you want us to say that it's going to happen this weekend, over the next week, over the next month? What do you want
No,
to do?
I think the sooner the better. So let's say over the next course of this week.
Okay, let's say we're going to ask for rain, okay? So what I'm going to need everybody to do then is all of your listeners, the really important thing about an intention experiment is the power of connection and feeling that you are palpably connected with everybody else. So I'd like you to just imagine mentally that you are holding hands with every single person on this call. And that usually is about 4 million, right? At least.
It varies and grows.
So just imagine you are listeners out there, that you're holding hands with everybody on this call. You are somehow connected. And I also, as we're going through it, I want you to always imagine Los Angeles being just deluged with rain, okay? Just imagine rain, people playing in the rain, people, you know, children bouncing in rain puddles. People putting cups outside and collecting rain, swimming pools that were lowered being filled up with rain. Just imagine rain. And I'd also like you to help me formulate an intention statement. So when I do an intention, I always make a positive statement and a very specific one.
Okay.
So we need to, what would be, George, a really successful rainfall that they need in terms of inches. What do you reckon?
I would say a solid 1 inch, because any more than that, Lynn, we're going to cause landslides.
Right.
So
okay.
I would say a solid 1 inch, which, you know, in the Midwest in the winter, a 1 inch rainstorm would be 10 inches of snow. So that's,
yes,
that's a lot. So let's say 1 inch.
Okay.
That's
all
a
right.
Heck of a storm.
Okay. So let's all imagine that, because as I say, the work that I've done demonstrates that the more specific, the better. Instead of just having some sort of nebulous thing like, you know, please let it rain. We're going to formulate an intention statement that is very specific and focuses on that 1 inch. So, and the other thing that we want to do is make it that it's our intention. Whenever we do this kind of intention work, we connect so that it's an our statement, because I've found that that's more powerful. And in scientific studies, they've found that when people do affirmations talking about we instead of I, not only does the team do better if they're doing it with sports, but the individual players do better. So let's talk about it as I and we. Let's think about I as we. So our intention is that Los Angeles will experience 1 inch of rain. We'll have a rainfall of 1 inch over the next week, okay? And
right,
as you're doing it, as I say, imagine Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, the Hollywood Hills, all of the areas of Los Angeles just being teeming in rain. So let's all connect. Let's all mentally connect. We're all holding hands at the moment. And I'd like you to take a deep inhale and a deep exhale. And a deep inhale. And a deep exhale. And now mentally join yourselves together. Formulate your intention and hold the statement. Our intention is that Los Angeles will experience 1 inch of rain over this next week. And just keep holding that intention. Bring it down from your head to your heart. And then send it out. And as you do, keep thinking that sentence. And keep imagining rainfall coming down. Imagine it just spilling on the streets of Rodeo Drive. Imagine it just coming down in that the all along the coast of Santa Monica, just spilling into the ocean, down to Venice. Imagine it going up the coast to Malibu, and just spilling down into the ocean. And imagine children outside playing in the rain, people looking amazed and thrilled to see the rain back. And imagine it just spilling out over Hollywood, Hollywood Hills, and just going up and down the coast, and even traveling further. But just keep just imagine the famous theater with all the hands in the cement. Imagine the rain falling all around there. Is that still called Grauman's?
Grauman's Theater, yeah.
Just imagine the rain just falling down Disney, just around Universal Studios and all of the theaters around there. Just imagine them just pouring with rain. Our intention is that Los Angeles will experience at least 1 inch of rain over the next week.
And that could be in little times. It could be a quarter of an inch on a Monday, another quarter of an inch on a Wednesday, right?
Absolutely. We're just talking about 1 inch in total. And just keep feeling the palpable sense of oneness as you send this intention. Just feel. I can feel it. It's just almost hard to hold this telephone right now because I'm feeling the energy that's just coming through.
Is the one as strong as the many, Lynn?
No, I think the many are stronger, to be honest. And we can talk about that in the next segment. It's something that I've actually been studying as much as looking at the results of the intention experiments themselves. So I just want everybody to just hold that thought. And as you go about your business over the next few days, why don't we say, if you're awake at this time every day, send a little two-minute intention every day for the next week that Los Angeles has rain, at least 1 inch of rain, and just hold that same intention. So now I want you to just send that intention out, just trust the process, and in your own time, come on back onto the call.
And Lynn, how about in your dream state? Can right before you go to bed, you think about this and then let it take over in your dream state?
Absolutely. I mean, because we're sending intention all of the time. What we usually find is that, you know, when I studied masters of intention, Buddhist monks, Qigong masters, master healers, they weren't in a quiet meditative state when they were sending it. They were in a very energized, highly focused mind state. So their brain waves weren't working at the speed of what they call beta, which is normal waking consciousness. They were moving up to gamma, which is much faster and harder brain waves. Basically, your mind is working harder and faster. You're at a peak of attention. And it was that kind of focused, highly focused hyperspace that is the kind of brain state to get to. So we've just played around here. But nevertheless, that power of that big collective, I find, is hugely powerful.
Now, the fact that we're doing this, and let's say that it works, mm-hmm. What happened? What created the rain clouds and all in the deluge? I mean, did we make that? Did we create that?
Well, it would seem that we did. We would have nudged a probability over to one, you know, moved it over to something that was more likely to happen. Because there's, you know, when we look at, let's go back to quantum physics. All physicists know that a subatomic particle isn't in anything yet. It's just a potential. And when you, and they found that it stays in this kind of nebulous possibility, all possible selves, almost like think of an auditorium and think of every chair in the auditorium. That's what subatomic particles are. They're every seat. Right. And they only settle down to one when a scientist observes them or takes a measurement. So from that, we infer that our big sticks and stones world also, which is made up of subatomic particles, is also a potential that's malleable, it's influenceable. And that is what I think we're doing.
All right, Lynn, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls as we talk about, of course, alternative medicine and, of course, intentions next on Coast to Coast AM.